Welcome to the Church of Mavis, coming at you straight live from the Ice Age. It's pretty cold in Florida, but not as cold as the rest of the nation, I'm pretty sure.
Philly's pretty bad right now too, dude.
It's like Ice Ragnarok of the Norse gods, they're coming. The earth is frozen, and definitely... we're going to have a very interesting guest on tonight. No matter how you feel about Christianity or the end of the world, this is a perspective that a lot of people believe that's possibly going to happen, and Peter Kling has a way to look at it that may make it make a lot more sense and to learn a lot more about it. But my big thing is, as far as, it's hard not to subscribe to it, or I guess I battle with subscribing to the role of, subjects such as New World Order and One World Government and things involving, talk of the Antichrist and Christ and just complete biblical Armageddon. He's going to break it down. And, the subject, there's a part of me that's like, well, this possibly could be true, despite what I may feel about, Christianity as a religion. There's certainly a lot of crazy stuff going on right now in our world on many subjects, from UFOs to UFOs are in the media every day, more and more and more. I search them out and put them on my wall on Facebook, and every day it's just more and more, buzz about UFO events in the media. And then just recently we had the release about, Kepler finding all these other planets, and it's like they're slowly building up to some kind of crescendo or step to something, behind the scenes, the wizard behind the curtain. So we're just going to break this down from Peter's perspective. And, Guy, do you have any commentary?
Yeah, you know, my issues aren't, you know, they're just not really with religion itself and the different religions or the Bible. It's just the people not being very good religious people. You know, so, you know, it makes it all hypocritical. I mean, there are tons of stuff in the Bible's true. I mean, there's chronologically it may not be right all the time, but it's a lot of that stuff. I mean, all the places existed and everything. So, you know.
Well, the thing with me is there's an interest in it, and I've read the Bible from front to back. I've seen, you know, God knows how many documentaries. I've seen every Jesus Christ movie made, I even believe. I have a high interest in it. But when you get down to the actual, you know, the end chapter, it's just, it makes Stephen King blush, you know. It's pretty horrific. It's there's a creepiness to it. And I guess that's where I kind of, I don't know, I've just been thinking about it for days. It's just creepy. It's like a giant John Carpenter movie waiting to happen that may be happening. And either way, even if it wasn't going to happen, a lot of people think it's going to happen, so they're going to manifest it even if it wasn't going to happen to begin with, which probably happened anyway. But Peter, let's get in with Peter into this. He can make a lot more sense of it. And I definitely think there's a lot to learn from him. Peter, if you would introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into your book, Letters to Earth, You Can Survive Armageddon.
Sure, Guy. You know, Guy, Jeffrey, thank both of you, first of all, for having me on the show. And, Guy, I'm going to disagree with you right off the bat. You see, you may not have a problem with or an issue with religion, but I do. Now,
well, you know what? I do have a problem with it, but I'm just trying to be nice to the guest, because if you go back on any of our other shows, all you hear me is yelling about religion and how bad it is.
Okay,
it's just,
well,
the people,
it's
the people
it's
don't.
Bad.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're going to talk about right now. Let me introduce myself. We're going to go from there, okay? My name is Peter Kling. I wrote Letters to Earth. I've got a website, www.peterkling.com. I've got a very interesting life. I'm 54, going on 55. I'll be 55 in April. Why I say it was interesting is because it was different from anybody else that I know. You see, I wasn't taught religion at 5 years old. At 5 years old, they started teaching me Bible prophecy. And at 7 years old, I started learning about the occult. Not how to utilize the occult, but the dangers of the occult. Who was lying behind the occult? What powers were actually being approached by the occult? By 9 years old, the most terrifying thing and the most life-changing thing to have happened to me in my whole life happened. I had a dream which came true about a week later. I was so terrified, I ran home and told my mother. My mother said, "Oh, that's nice, dear. It's time for you to go to bed." The only ones who believed me about the dream that came true were my little friends. But this set off a paradox. You see, everything that I was learning was like, well, first you start to learn the prophecies, and you start, and then they started teaching me, you know, the Bible and the different stories in the Bible and how it starts to all tie together. And we went from Genesis to, I knew from Genesis to Revelation before I was seven. Interesting. Not too many kids do that. You see, I grew up with this. But anyway, what was totally unexpected was starting to have prophetic dreams, knowing something before it was actually going to happen. Now, there's an interesting correlation in the Bible with the prophet Samuel. His mother made a deal with God, and at 5 years old, Samuel went to the temple, and the first thing he started to do was hear voices and prophesy to the high priest. Now, I'm not saying that's my job, but anyway. Life goes on. I started to pursue chemistry, and I took an interest in science and started to learn chemistry at the age of 10. At the age of 18, I had contact with aliens. It was more what I would say a series of memory implants or mind captures. You know, if you've seen the movie Total Recall, I mean, you could have a total memory of something that you think is 100% true with dates and the whole nine yards, but yet it never really happened. But you know what? For me, it happened. And I buried that part of my life for the longest time because I was trying to be recruited. I could never figure out why I was trying to be recruited. It's not what I was trying to be recruited to. It was what I was being recruited away from. And the interesting thing is, at that time, this is 1974, the Vietnam War was starting to wind down, which I was totally happy because I was 100% pacifist. In 1974, they still had the draft lottery, and I was like number 26. I was one H. Hold on, son. This may not be over yet. And I was a pacifist.
So, Peter, who was bringing you up in this way? Your parents, or what religion were they part of?
My mother was the most influential, but there was a lot of influential people in my life, and it wasn't just from a religious standpoint because I right away turned to science. And I don't know if you're listening to your last guest, but you need to blend the two to get the answers. You see, how the alien contact ended is that my life was threatened. And from the age of 18 until just last year, I should have been dead a total of 14 times now. The last time was the most interesting. One time, I believe I actually was dead and had what people would call a near-death experience. This was an actual death experience. My soul, my life force, was out of my body, and it was being absorbed by a huge energy force. It was like I was a cloud, and one side there was a little strand attached to my body, and on the other side I was being sucked into this huge energy force, and I knew I was dying.
And so who's been trying to kill you?
Yeah, well, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
the threat was from my alien contact. It was quite interesting, and I never really shared much of this until just recently, and I met somebody on Facebook that said, you know what, I had the contact. And they took me to the same exact place, it was the same exact people, it was the same, and I'm like, wow. But that made me feel better. It still sends chills over I have them right now going up and down my skin that somebody experienced what I experienced but whatever. 2 months after that, I was in a motorcycle accident, and I had a glass jar in my pocket. It was interesting. Before I got on the highway to head down the road, I thought, boy, that would be terrible if I dropped this bike and they'd be picking glass out of my guts for a week. I impacted the ground, unscrewed the lid on the jar, but the jar never broke.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Lucky.
3 months after that, this is actually about 5 months after the alien contact, I just got a new car. It was a used car. It was a nice little Triumph GT6. It had spoked wire wheels, an engine in it. The thing was probably about 2,200 pounds and about 200 horsepower. It would get rubber in all four gears. The guy who I bought it from changed the tires the day before. I went over to see a friend of mine. I was living in southern Appalachia in North Carolina at the time. I was going over to a friend's house in Knoxville. And on the mountain road, the front tire came off, and I rolled it down a riverbank. They found the tire on the other side of the river. I opened my eyes for a second, and all I saw was glass and dirt flying through the inside of the car. When it stopped, I got my ass out of the car, ran up to the road and just stood there and was like, well, blow up or do something. You know, cars just don't do that. At least mine didn't. But we pulled it. I was kind of dismantling. I was going to sell it for parts. Somebody came up to where I was working and said, wow, who got killed in this thing? And I said, nobody. I'm doing okay. So, yeah, it only gets better from there. But it's interesting because these were all different situations. At 22, I started learning metaphysics because I needed answers for the things that were happening, and I was taught how to use the other side of your brain, the part of the brain that we don't really use, the part that connects us back to the ether, if you want to call it that. I don't mind plugging these folks. I think they're great. It's the silver. Silver Ultramind is what they're calling the class now. Back then it was Silver Mind Control. Everybody thought I was joining a cult. but it was probably the most enlightening thing that I've ever done. In my mid-20s, it dawned, I was actually reading the book of Job one day, and in the book of Job, there's a verse which basically said, I'll paraphrase it, "Have you seen my storehouses of ice and snow, which I have saved up for the day of distress and war?" And I'm thinking, well, God's talking to Job here in the Middle East. What would Job know of ice and snow? You know, it's like, wait a minute, what is he talking? So what I did in my mind, I was actually meditating. I used my put my skills together here, started meditating about what Job would see. So I saw, I looked in Job's eyes, and I saw what was around there. And the only thing that Job would have seen were the mountaintops. So I started looking at the mountaintops, but then I went to, like, Google Maps, and I started to back out in my mind. And I thought, oh, my goodness, there's the storehouses of snow. They're on the poles. Now, this was back in the early 1980s. It was about 10 years before the words global and warming were a phrase. As a matter of fact, I know that because it dawned on me that God was going to do something with the polar ice caps. And I said, what do you do with ice? Melt it? And I thought, geez, if you melt the ice, what do you do to the oceans? You raise the ocean level. Not only that, you increase the weight of the overall weight of the surface of the oceans because they're now getting deeper. 1 inch of water would equal billions of tons of weight on the face of the earth, which would be no wonder we're having volcanoes go pop and earthquakes. But there's more reason to that. Anyway, it dawned on me, too, that if that was the case, if I was reading something that was going to take place in the future, and if the Bible ended with revelation that essentially the people who had to live through Armageddon were the target audience of the Bible, for the whole period of time of recorded history, 3,500 years essentially, that has been encapsulated into a book and preserved to our day for people so they could understand what was going on in this time period. Not people that haven't picked up a Bible or have never read one, but people who, like me, who have studied it all my life. I understand what's going on based on the prophecies. That was the first thing they taught me, were the prophecies. And then started to put science to what I had learned from the religious side of the house, if you want to call it. There wasn't any religious dogma in it. It was learning Bible prophecy. It was understanding the Bible prophecies. From that aspect, I put science into the picture because at that point I was working in a research and development lab. And the great thing, if you look at really pure science, and something that you're for this one, they said, well, scientists have gotten to the point where they're actually, it's more about the grants than about the research. And that becomes so cubbyholed or so pigeonholed that they don't look around. They're just focused on what they're getting their grant money for. And I call it being educated to the point of ignorance, because true science means that you keep your mind open and accept all things and then figure if it applies or if it doesn't. Working in a research facility gave me that mindset that you pay attention to all things because you don't know what's going to work and what's not going to work. And then when you find what works, you reduce it to its most simplest form so it can be reproduced. And so that's what I did. And I started looking for scientific evidence in the Bible to support my theory. Now, here's part of the scientific evidence that I found. Genesis 2:20, and I'm sure if anybody has heard anything out of the Bible, it's this. And God took a rib from the man, and he built a woman from it. And he brought the woman to the man, and he gave her to him. And the man said, at last, this is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. Now let's look at what happened here. A tissue sample was removed from the man Adam and genetically engineered into a woman, this woman being Adam's cloned twin sister, and Adam knew it because Adam said, hey, it's a female version of me. She's just like me. She's flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. Thank you, God. She was the ideal mate for him. She was him. I mean, come on. Wouldn't you like a girl that would go out and drink beer and shoot pool with you or go down and go water skiing or whatever you wanted to do? She was, like, right there. Unfortunately, Adam must have been too adventurous because Eve got into the poison fruit. But that may be more allegory than factual. I've got a scientific answer, too, for the fruit. The fruit contained a virus which essentially erased part of our DNA. If Eve ate that fruit, no matter what it was, it would have erased, just like getting an AIDS virus or a herpes virus. Herpes is a good explanation. Herpes attaches itself to your DNA and stays there. It doesn't go away. So once you're infected, you have it for life. However, if you take something that's got a virus and it goes in and it erases part of the information, science would never know it was there to begin with. They would look at our DNA and say, yep, it's all there, it's all complete, because this is what we found after the erasure took place. And God, and the scriptures could say, from the very day that you eat from that tree, you're going to die. It's poison. It is going to genetically destroy you. Now, there's some scientific reasons also for things that had changed the course of history. We'll get into them eventually. But think about it. We have in the Bible, in Genesis, which the church has been jumping up and down about for years, saying, look at the miracle of God. Wait a minute. It's a miracle of genetic engineering. We can do this today. So who genetically engineered us?
It makes sense.
Now the picture of God changes, doesn't it?
You know why that makes sense to me, Peter?
Why is that?
It's because if you look at human beings, how we are now, and you look at all the other, you know, species that have evolved, they all have certain defense mechanisms. Yeah, they have defense mechanisms. I mean, they can be out in the cold. We can't be any of there. We can't do any of that stuff. We got to sit inside a house with a heater. You know, we couldn't defend ourselves. We don't have claws. We don't have, you know, hair. We used to.
We had. Well, you see, now here's an interesting thing. Humanoids used to. Homo sapiens used to. We are in the process of de-evolution. We are not evolving anymore as a species. We are devolving. And if you look at the history of the Bible, it records the ages of the people who lived at certain times. Now, a day to God is equal to a 1,000 earth years. Adam lived to be 936 according to the chronology of the Bible. The oldest man in the Bible was Methuselah, who lived to be 969 years old. The ages kept on being reduced. It was reduced dramatically after the flood of Noah's day, or the last ice age, whichever school of thought you'd like to go with. But there's some interesting things that have gone on here. First of all, radiocarbon dating is not accurate. It's accurate only under laboratory conditions. Radiocarbon dating is based on the degradation of carbon-14, and that is caused by solar radiation, adjusting either up or down, and you adjust the degradation to carbon-14, and therefore it cannot be held as anything but an approximation. If there was once a water canopy around the Earth, that would have reduced the amount of solar radiation reaching the surface of the Earth, and that would skew every carbon-14 dating from about 6,000 years ago on back to approximately 50,000 years ago.
Right, yeah, the last ice age would have done that.
Yeah, well, you see, they chalk it up to the ice age. But now, let's look at this logically. Where did the ice form? They say that there was a land bridge that formed between Alaska and Siberia. Okay, I'll buy that. What did the massive amounts of animals eat when they crossed all that ice? Snowballs? You see,
I don't know. I don't know if the bridge itself was ice. I mean, because there was a bridge also. Well, no, actually, the Panama Canal, all in that area, was land.
Yeah, I
had
agree.
It had its own land bridge. There was no ice.
If you put a water canopy around the Earth, guess what would happen? what the physical effects that would take place is all of a sudden you would wipe out every stinking hurricane that ever, what are they having, what do they call them in the Philippines?
I know what you're talking about.
Major storms, but you would stop all of those. You would stop every tornado because you wouldn't have the inversion going on as you would. You would have minor melting from the poles because the ice that was piled up there, and that ice has been there for hundreds of thousands, in some cases in Antarctica, millions of years. So we know that had quite some time, at least not the deep core ice pack. But if you put that water canopy around, guess what? You also even out the temperatures of the Earth. So you could now have a much further range from the equator. Without clothes, you're pretty much stuck to around the equator area. You're not going to go too much further. And if you look at what is said in Genesis, man was created separately. He was created, quote, in the image of God and separate from the animals. He was created separately from Cro-Magnon man. He was given that. Now, I'm not going to say that God created a whole new species. Maybe he did. But that genetic template of Cro-Magnon man, that form, was used as the finished product for human mankind. So it would make sense to me to take the genes from Cro-Magnon man, tweak them, put the God genes in it, and add whatever DNA that you have to in order to make it in the image of God, to give us the consciousness, to give us the quality of love, to give us the quality of planning ahead and planning our own future separate of what nature dictates. You know, we can plan for the seasons, but we do based on what happens in the earth. But we are all agents of free will. The animals are not. The animals move with the, as you pointed out, we stay in our homes, we put on more clothes, we throw more wood on the fire, burn more fossil fuel, whatever the case is, in order to endure the hardship of the area in which we live. We've built cities on earthquake zones. Guess what? When the earth moves, the next time the cities are coming down. Oh, it's Armageddon. No, it's the natural processes of earth. And that's kind of what we're getting set up for. So here we have, if we go back to the genetic engineering model, take a look at the fossil record. Follow it all the way back to the Precambrian era, and what you find is that there was virtually nothing but single-cell life there. But then comes the Cambrian period, and all of a sudden, you've got genetic information that is all over the place. There was more genetic information on the face of the Earth during the Cambrian period than has ever been here since. Trilobites, you know, those little critters that run across the bottom of the ocean, they look like pill bugs. As a matter of fact, the pill bugs or sow bugs are the only living relatives. There were 17,000 different kinds of them. Just one species, 17,000 different kinds. We had an abundance of earth. That's like going to bed at night into your teepee and stepping out into Times Square, and there's nothing but Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Porsches running around. Where did all the technology come from? And it came, in geological terms.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, the same as the, it's pretty weird, too. Like, each one of those eras had an explosion like that, you know?
Yeah.
And was wiped out, and everything started over again.
Sure. And now here's the interesting thing. If there was genetic engineering going on, who was doing the genetic engineering? Because in the Bible it says, God said, let this happen. He said, he actually said, let the seas put forth swarms, and let the skies put forth swarms, and let grasses grow on the earth. He was giving commands. He wasn't busting his butt. He was giving orders. So who was carrying out the orders? Wouldn't it make sense that there was some intelligent life form that was doing genetic engineering, not just on Earth, but on all planets in the universe that were capable of sustaining life? And it's been bouncing back and forth within the third dimension for the past half a billion years doing this as part of their job. Now, the first place, the next process after those life forms came the human life forms. And the babies were born us. And that's where the problem starts, because the genetic life, the life forms that were responsible for the genetic engineering of the third dimension wanted to play God. And this being physical cannot directly interface with what we know as God or what we call God. And I'll explain God in a minute. But the life forms that genetically engineered us can. So if we can't see God, but they can see God, once they break that bond that we had between us and God, it was a spiritual bond, they broke that when the forbidden fruit was eaten. That was that whole scenario back in the Garden of Eden. Once that spiritual bond was broken, we started to die. Not just us, but we lost a dimension of our universe. String theory, which we're going to get into in just a little bit, both string and M-theory say the same thing. String theory says in order for our three-dimensional universe to exist, there needs to be seven additional dimensions that we're not aware of, but if they're not there, we do not exist. Now, here's some interesting correlation. The biblical number for spiritual completeness is seven. The biblical number for spiritual incompleteness is six. The biblical number for human completeness is 10. We need 10 dimensions in order to exist. If God pulled back one of those dimensions, or the energy force that we call God pulled back one of those dimensions, guess what's going to eventually spin out of control? The third dimension. Now, how do you explain God? Here's how it took me 2 years to come up with this, and I'm not proud that it took me that long because it's so stinking simple. And it was part of my theory, my theoretical work back when I started this 30 years ago. Well, I had to come up with something that explained all energy, the same energy that you gave off in a thought process, which we can measure. We can't measure the energy you give off, but we can measure what's going on in your brain. But we know that when you have a thought, you're giving off energy. That energy needs to be the same type of energy that is released during an atomic explosion. The reason for that is because you can neither create nor destroy energy. You can only change its form. Now, if that's a true statement, let's look at another true statement. The Bible says God always was and he always will be. He is the Alpha and the Omega. Before him there was nothing. After him there will be nothing. If both statements are correct, then at one time, God had to be, or what we call God, had to be the sum of all energy in its most pure state or form. Nothing else existed except for this energy. There would only be a need for one dimension, the God dimension. Now, what turned this God into a multidimensional being? My thought was, based on the information at hand, is that if all of this energy was compact, and we are thinking individuals, we have thoughts, that this energy must have been in a very similar dreamlike state because it was inactive. It hadn't made anything. It was just there. And one day it came up with the concept of one simple word. It came up with the concept of love. And if you look in John, and actually, it's, I believe it's in 4th John, the 4th verse, I forget exactly what, I'm sorry, 1st John, 4th chapter, I forget the verse, it says, God is love. Out of power, wisdom, might, all the different qualities that John could have chosen, he chose love. Why? This energy came up with a great concept of love. You can't give it away. The more you give, the more you're in love, the better you feel. If you had one kid or 10,000 kids, you love them all. We all love to be loved. Love is what drives the human race. It works on so many different levels. You can love your bowling ball. You can love your car. You can love your golf clubs. You can love your skis. You can love your dog. You can love your kids. You can love your parents. And you can love your sweetheart in a way that nobody
else
can.
Love yourself, too.
And yes, most of all, well, that's what we have to start doing, is loving ourselves. We here in America have been beaten down for the last 11 years. We have been beaten down by the Bush administration and the cronies who he was working for, who are the same people that the Obama administration is working for, who are the same people that every administration has been working for since 13. And guess what? It all ties back into this, to the same subject that we're talking about. Let's go back to God. my thought is that this energy came up with the concept of love, and it worked on so many different ways. And he said, you know what? I'm going to create other life forms that can turn around and love too. And so the first thing that he created, according to what's recorded in the Bible, was the life form that we know of as Jesus. Only his name is given name in the outside of our third dimension is Michael. Now, the name Michael literally means who is like Yahweh. And Yahweh is the name that God chose for himself. The English translation is Jehovah. But Yahweh or Jehovah both mean he who causes to become. So we have this energy who started to cause to become other things. And so we have the start of the creation process through different split-offs of energy. If you want to look at on a biological level, we could say that the energy cell of God divided. It didn't divide equally. It divided into another energy life form that was named Michael, or as we know, Jesus. And that life form then started to create other life forms. And those life forms created other life forms. But now here's the difference. They can't reproduce themselves. They can only reproduce like. And it stops with, except for us humans. Humans are the, according to what's recorded, humans are the only intelligent life forms with free will who can create other intelligent life forms with free will. Everything else has been cut off. The aliens that we have floating around us, these other life forms, can only manipulate the genetic engineering of the original life. They cannot start it. That's why when they transmuted into the Anunnaki and had relations with the daughters of men, the Book of Enoch calls them the Watchers. The Bible calls them the sons of the true God. They had sex with the daughters of men, and they created these hybrid offspring known as Nephilim. Now, there was two reasons for that to happen, but that's another story. Going
so
back to God.
Peter, who gave Eve cosmic herpes? Who put the fruit there?
Well, here's the thing. We get into more of a philosophical end of it. If we want to break it down, what it comes down to, and it's really, we're in the middle of a court case, to be honest. It all comes down to who has the right to rule over the humans, interestingly enough. You see, let's get into the devil, Lucifer, Satan. His name is not recorded anywhere, only his title. Devil means deceiver, Satan means slanderer. The title that he's given in the Bible is the covering cherub of Eden. How glorious, the covering cherub of Eden, where human life started. Now, my guess is that he had a dog in this fight. So if he had that title, and he was so important, because if you go into the verses before where it talks about him being the covering cherub of Eden, in Daniel or Ezekiel, I forget now. But anyway, it compares him to the king of Tyre and the king of Sidon, and how beautiful he was, and how he was just so wonderful and so glorious, and how he became self-enamored, and then his own importance became more than anybody else's. And so what had happened is he challenged the energy that sits at the center of all dimensions, if we can call it that. He challenged that energy for the right to rule over the humans. Now, let's get back to God or Yahweh. The best way to understand this energy, and think about our own universe. If you took all the energy in our universe and collapsed it down, we're talking about an energy that is probably trillions of times more dynamic. But we have to think in along the lines of M theory, which running in accordance with string theory, and that is multi-dimensional universe or a multiverse, where we know that the mathematics say for us to be here, there's got to be seven other places kind of like this, but we don't know what they are. They exist outside of our three-dimensional world. The best way to think about this is think of a Russian nesting doll. And in the center is the core or the energy, the dynamic energy that we know or we call God. And each doll which goes around that energy is another dimension. Dr. Michio Kaku said that a Tyrannosaurus Rex could be running through our living room right now, and we would never know it because it existed in another dimension. I thought, oh, really? Does that mean that we could be running through God's living room right now and we wouldn't know it because he exists in another dimension, which is pretty much what the fact of it is? You see, our third dimension is growing. The universe is growing. But we don't know what other dimensions are. Well, we know the other dimensions are there, but we don't know what's happening with them. We don't know anything about the life forms that are in there. Our science is limited to the third dimension. We use physical science to try to explain the world around us. The only problem is we live in three of seven parts, of, in three-tenths of our universe, essentially. We know nothing about the other seven-tenths, except that God lives in one of them. And that's it. We know that they're occupied by intelligent life forms who can go between our dimension and their dimension. And now those intelligent life forms have manifested themselves here on Earth for some reason, maybe prophetic. And we're seeing reports of UFOs almost at least once a week. But if you're on Facebook, you see them all day long. Jeffrey, you said you've promoted lots of information pertaining to aliens and UFOs. I mean, come on, they're almost becoming commonplace. Really, you think there might be a plan to that?
Definitely looks like there's a plan with it, with the powers that be, because, I mean, they just did the Kepler announcement of all the planets that were just found, and it's like phenomenal numbers of planets that could be habitable. And it definitely seems like there's something, you know, going on in the background, that they're up to something that's leading to something, but it's slow. And, you know, of course, you still get to a hopeless point of they're just, you know, just going to keep the secrecy up. But there is something, seems like a lot more going on than usual when it comes to this subject in the media.
Well, let's try to tie some of this stuff together, okay? And we'll bring it up to where we are in point in time. Let's go back to the Adam and Eve story, because you raised the question about this fruit. There's more of a philosophical situation with the fruit. God said, yep, don't eat from it. The day that you eat from it, it's going to die. What he didn't say, explain to them is that there's a virus inside the fruit. When you eat that virus, it's going to erase part of your genetic engineering, and your ability to reproduce correctly is no longer going to be there. You are going to die within one of my days. Now, there was a matter of obedience here. And God didn't tell this to Eve. He only told it to Adam. Adam was a direct creation, according to the information of the Bible. It doesn't say anything that he was genetically engineered. So whether the template was made or was taken, or whether biological information was taken, or whether they started from scratch and just used the form of Cro-Magnon man, I don't know. I wasn't there. But I know what the end result was. They created a perfect human that wasn't supposed to die, that had the genetic information in their bodies, which let them reproduce. We would essentially all look like about the age of 30 to 35, somewhere in that range. Now, I think that's personally, I think that's pretty good, because this body has been beat to hell. I could use a new one.
Yeah.
I would appreciate some genetic repair. You know, give me that missing part of the DNA. Let's fix this body up. It's all busted up to pieces, and it ain't going to make it much further. But you know what? I can wait a few more years, and that's pretty much all we're going to have to wait. But the philosophical thing is that they disobeyed God. But not only did they disobey God, Adam listened to his wife Eve. You see, he said, Eve, don't eat from this, because God said not to eat from this. And then Eve said, you know what, Adam, I think that this is pretty good. I think we ought to eat from this. And Adam said, well, I don't know about that. And Eve said, you know, Adam, I control half the apples and 100% of the rest of the stuff here. So you can either do what I say or go without. And Adam said, well, you know what? I kind of like the gift that God gave me. I don't want to piss her off, so I think I'll take a bite of this. And what he did in essentiality is put his wife's word, and you have to remember that he took his sister's word. Let's put it that way. Let's put it in context. He took his sister's word over God's word, and God was pissed. You listen to her? What's wrong with you? I got to work with you? No, not anymore. We're done. And you see, when God said we're done, that ended a bunch of stuff. That ended our seventh dimension connections. We only have six dimensions supporting our three-dimensional world right now, and our world is spinning into crisis. We need to have that other dimension reattached. And you see, all these people who are in the Enlightenment movement and who all think that we can bring this about by wishing each other love and by praying that, you know, for God to be with us and just by envisioning wonderful, pure thoughts, we can change all this around. Yeah, it ain't going to work unless God say so. And God ain't said so yet, because there's a mess that needs to be cleaned up here first. Yeah, that seventh dimension will come back. They know it's there. All these people in the Enlightenment movement know it's there. They see it. They feel it. They can hold on to it. But they cannot receive it because it's not being put back yet. They can only anticipate it. So that they form their whole religious idea around that thought. And it's, yes, it's the right thought. But you know what? It's like driving a car down a highway and somebody took the bridge out. You're looking at the scenery on the other side of the bridge. You don't realize there's no damn bridge there anymore. You better hit the brakes quick and pay attention, because the Rothschilds are running this world. And if you don't believe me, investigate it yourself. It's not the Rothschilds, the global elite. But at last count, the Rothschild family controlled approximately 900 trillion, I'll say that again, $900 trillion. Thank you, sir. May we have another? Thank you, sir. May we have another? Boy, you owe me lots of money. I'm going to take your country. And that's where we're sitting right now. That's where we're sitting right now. Our GNP cannot keep up with what we're spending, and sooner or later, this country will be totally bankrupt, which is exactly where they're driving us, and we have about one more year to buy what we want to buy. So if you're going to want to get out and get your new vehicle, get it now, but you're not going to be able to put gas in it. Make sure it's electric. At least you can get a solar panel.
Our economy is based on spending money that we don't have.
Yeah. You know, I watched a program a couple of years ago that our economy is based on silicone chips. It's based on how much information we can put on silicone chips. And because the capacity of what we can put into a computer doubles about I think they have it down to about every 9 months now. It used to be out to about 18 months, but now it's about every 9 months. But when they can't put any more information on a computer chip, there's no reason to buy a computer. And so everybody is stuck with unless they figure out how to put information on crystals, like diamonds and other things, like what may have been put on the crystal skulls. We're stuck in the silicone era, but I'm sure we've already figured that out. But think about it. Think about all of these silicone chips, which are bought every year and thrown away every year. Billions. So we actually are running on silicone. Once we run out of memory storage capacity, the Earth is doomed anyway, because nobody will have any money to turn around and invest in silicone chips. But it'll end long before that. It was that the global elite were going to try to pull it off with carbon credits. However, too many scientists are jumping up and down and saying, what? Carbon credits? You're nuts. We're going through a natural cycle of the Earth. This has nothing to do with how much jet fuel we burn, how much fossil fuel we put up into the air. This has something to do with where we are in time and space, not what we are doing so much to the Earth. Yeah, we're destroying the Earth. It's basically useless anymore as far as a self-sustaining planet. If we don't change what we're doing, the Earth is, we're going to kill this planet. You ever see the movie Soylent Green? There's a lot of reality into that movie. A lot of reality. So for those who don't know, go look up Soylent Green. Soylent Green was supposed to be the next thing that was going to save man excuse me, from starvation. They were harvesting the algae from the sea. The only thing is that the sea was dead and Soylent Green was people.
Yum.
Yeah. Soylent Green is people. So we've reached the point to guess what? Maybe that's why the Zionists call us Goyim cattle.
Mm.
Yeah. Something to think about. Now, that brings us to back to after. Let's go back to the Anunnaki. We've got this whole situation going on. God gets pissed, tells Noah to build a boat, says, gather all the animals, I'm making it rain. And what happens is some cataclysmic event in that water canopy that kept all the temperatures nice and even, it fell onto Earth, and what we had is a massive amount of water hitting the face of the Earth, driving the mountain ranges up into places that they've never been before, and driving the depths of the ocean down. We've created, there are evidences around the world of bodies of animals being smushed together with tree trunks and tree limbs. We're talking mastodons, the quote, ice age animals or pre-ice age animals, all smashed together in big piles. We find mastodons, or mammoths rather, that still have green vegetation in their system, indicating that they were clean, as in a temperature inversion. If there was a water canopy above the Earth, the animals would have had no problem walking between Siberia and Alaska. There wouldn't have been much ice there for them to have to worry about, and there would have been plenty of land because the ocean levels would have been shallower. A lot more land would have been exposed. You ever look at where the continental shelf is? Look at where the continental shelf is around the whole entire globe. It's out. From the continental shelf, it goes down. Think about how much water there is off of the continental shelf. You go from a couple of hundred feet all the way down to 2,000 feet in some places, several thousand feet. You get to the Marianas Trench, you're looking at 36, 37,000 feet deep. So you put enough water on a ball of clay and it's going to crumble. And let's face it, we're looking at forces we don't quite understand here. And you put that much pressure on the magma shell, just like kind of squeezing an egg, it's going to fracture. That shell is going to fracture in certain places. You're going to cause dips to go down and ridges to come up, and that's exactly what we see around the Earth. Look at the Grand Canyon. Hey, run the flood down through the Grand Canyon. Wouldn't take you but a week to clean that sucker out. But that's the type of thing that technology, that history, that part of archaeology is buried. People who come out and say anything about the flood, oh, well, you're crazy. So they say, well, there was a climate 5,000 or 6,000 years ago. We can see that by the high Andes and where the chinchillas used to store their food. At radiocarbon dates back to 5,000 years, and so we know it's good that this was a green pasture once upon a time. Yeah, that's right. 100% correct. But when you have global climate change, that doesn't happen anymore. You now have arid deserts that are up at 30,000 feet. There's not enough water that falls there in a year to turn around and get a drink. So you've got all these earth changes which have happened, which scientists say, oh, well, it was ice ages that took thousands and billions and millions of years to go on. And did they? Yeah, there's some truth to what they're saying. The ice ages have been here. They've been receding and going back for millions of years. I'm not going to disagree with that. I believe we were a snowball planet once upon a time. Before that, we were a water planet. There was no land. You go back far enough, we weren't anything. We were a ball of gas floating around a bigger ball of gas. So it all depends on where you want to go and how far back you want to go in our history. If you want to go further than that, we were part of God, which went from the physical from the spiritual to the physical. Well, how does that happen? If you look at what powers string is what makes up our molecules, what makes up the atoms, the neutrons, the protons. So if you set a little piece of energy to vibrate at a certain speed and keep that a constant, you can turn around and build whatever you want once you microencapsulate it. And then you set up little gravitational fields around them so they don't collide, so they keep plenty of room. And then you can connect them because certain protons attract neutrons and they light certain chemicals like to be more friends with other chemicals, and you start forming compounds and strings, and before you know it, you, guess what? You got the basis for life. All you need is some kind of electronic zap, and the Bible says, God's active force moved to and fro over the watery deep. Gee, there's some kind of power force going on. Something zapped the water to turn this stuff into single-cell life. And all you got to do is send the guys out with the blueprints.
Hey, Peter, we got about 30 seconds left before we go on about a 10-minute break.
Okay.
You want to wrap things up?
Well, I'll tell you what. Where would you like to start? Because we can bring it right up to here. Am I on for another hour, or are we?
Yeah. Yes, you are, sir. Yeah, okay, another hour.
Just stick by the phone, and basically, when we come back, we'll get into other topics, like the Antichrist.
We're going to bring it up.
You can survive Armageddon. How do you survive Armageddon if Armageddon is truly manifesting? So we'll get into all that, and I'm more curious into your views on Christ as well in all this.
I'll tell you what. That's a great, right here. Let's start that. We'll start basically from the start of religion. How's that? We'll pick it up with the start of religion because that ties in directly to where we are today. The same God that was worshipped 5,000 years ago that we know as Satan, the devil, or Lucifer is still being worshipped, and he's being worshipped by the Rothschilds and their family friends. And they control the world.
Wow.
More to come.
All right. Well, we'll be back with Peter Kling, Church of Amos.
Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.giascott.com.
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about? Then please join us here every Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, with your host, D. Andrew, right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. And remember, UFO research is not a belief system.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know. I'm Irish.
I will make you understand.
Paranormal Radio.
Welcome back to the Church of Mavis. This is Jack Nicholson with Bible Study with Peter Kling tonight. That's right. That's how we do it. So we were talking, this is a spin on the Bible that makes a lot more sense to me on many levels. God, you know, being the creator and some type of alien intelligence, and then, you know, another form of the fallen ones that are in league with supposedly the villain of the cosmic drama, Satan. There's just definitely an alien element to all that that's not spoke about in religion. And we were talking about fear and damnation and rapture, the rapture being created by mankind. And that's where I want to start back at with Peter. We could get into that a bit.
Yeah, a lot of people, and I know, boy, this is going to feathers going if I've got evangelistic Christians listening, but the rapture is actually man-made. I can go back and pull out all the details for you. I really don't particularly care. If you want to believe it, go ahead and believe it. But essentially, it's based on what happens to a select group of humans. The number is given as 144,000 who are brothers in Christ, as they are called. And these are people who have been faithful to the word of Jesus, or imitating what Jesus had said to the best of their ability. They are chosen not by anybody here on earth. They are chosen, and they are actually transformed. Their physical life ends, but their life force, their soul, actually goes into an energy state, which becomes, similar to what I experienced when I died. My soul was this, like, white cottony energy. I don't have any other way to explain it. But I was being absorbed. I didn't have any choice in the matter. I was at the mercy of what was going on. However, when that number of people, that 144, die, they have full control over the energy. As a matter of fact, they become some of the most powerful energy forces known in the multiverse. But there's a limited number, and that is taken from the time that Jesus walked the face of the earth up until when what's called the Great Tribulation, or the establishment of the New World Order, When the New World Order starts, whoever's not off this planet ain't leaving. Now, the rapture came out of this basic teaching, and it ties into teachings that applied only to this group. And what they did is they applied it to anybody who believes. So we're all going to heaven, and at the right time, God's going to take us off so we don't have to experience Armageddon. Well, what in the world did you learn? Nothing. Because it's those who survive Armageddon, those who make it through all this nonsense will know. They will absolutely know that the past 6,000 years of history that we've had is nothing but garbage and a sham. And we will be put on a new track, and this is the latter chapters in Revelation come in, where we will be brought to the Enlightenment, where we will have our DNA repaired, where we will be eventually we'll be brought back into our multiverse family. We'll understand who these creatures are, who these life forms, these aliens actually are. Right now, they're not permitted to associate with us directly. And if they are associating with us, they're part of the rebel force. And that's an easy way to describe it. The good guys aren't in the third dimension yet. Well, some of them are, but they're here more as scouts than anything else. They're not here to get involved in a direct way at this point. That's going to come later. So everybody who believes in the rapture, go look up the origin of the rapture, and you'll find out it was invented back in the 1800s, in the early 1800s, and you will not find any history of the rapture prior to that. I forget the gentleman's name who came up with the theory of the rapture, but go on Google, you can find it. I did.
Let me ask this real quick. It's all right. Basically, wasn't the rapture entirely based on Revelation? So,
yeah, it's that those people but it was limited to a group of people. It was limited to that 144,000. It's in Revelation 6 or 7, I believe. It runs down a list of 12,000 out of each of the 12 tribes of Israel, but it doesn't have physical application because during Jesus' day. He was only there to preach or teach to the nation of Israel who was allegedly God's chosen people because of an Abrahamic covenant, the covenant that God set up with Abraham historically. And so God honored that, and the Messiah had to come through Abraham's line and then eventually through the Davidic line or through David's family tree. And indeed, if you look on both Mary and Jesus' stepfather, Joseph, both of those lineages can be tracked back to David, King David first, and then back to Abraham. But when the Jewish Sanhedrin, when the high court turned around and executed Jesus, something that very few people talk about, when Jesus died, there was a tremendous earthquake in Judea, and the petition between the holy and the most holy, and the petition was made out of animal hide. It was made out of animal skin. It was 18 inches thick. It was ripped in two. And so the Jewish law ended, and the law of Messiah, the law of love God and love your neighbor, started. And so what spun off for that was Christianity, but Christianity doesn't teach anything that Jesus taught, and it does not teach what's in the Bible. Oh, yeah, love your friends, love your neighbors, love God. Uh-huh. Get past the ammunition. We're going to war. There are
Amen to that, brother.
There are no atheists in foxholes. We all believe in God. Uh-huh. Then what are you doing on the front lines if you believe in God? Because it
reminds me of the Serge Tankian song, Praise the Lord, Pass the Ammunition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what do you find in every battle? You find the religious clergy right on the front lines blessing the soldiers before they pass away or blessing them before they go into battle or blessing them after a victory. Who are they blessing them in the name of? Yahweh or Satan? Who wants to see humans destroy, murder, kill, rape, burn each other? Does that sound like something that a loving God would want? the creator of all life? Would he want that? Or does that sound like a pissed off brat who's breaking his toys?
You know what? That's just our nature, man.
Yeah, you know why? We're missing one of the dimensions. We are demented.
Gotta be.
We are demented.
Yeah, stuff's broke. I mean, it's broke.
Yeah, and there is no fixing it. And people know it, and they're saying there is no way out. Religion has failed us. Government has failed us. God help us. Please send us the aliens.
Our economy, look at what happened with all this global warming stuff. Whether it was real or not, it forced people to look at other things and create new economies.
Yeah, we have.
You know what I mean? Like green economy. But we don't do that until we can't breathe anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, it takes. Listen, when all those gas prices went up to like $5 a gallon, everybody and their mother ordered electric cars. When the gas prices went down, everybody canceled their orders.
Yeah. We are taught to live in a knee-jerk reaction. We are in I want it now society. Oh, Jim Jones has a flat screen TV, a 60-inch flat screen TV. I want one like his. Yeah, well, you know what? Jim Jones wasn't he the guy that turned around and had all those people drink that Kool-Aid? Yeah, he was. So, you know, we can't necessarily be like our neighbors, especially when it comes to a situation that means our lives. And yet we've been duped into this idea that we need to have everything. If a model, let's go to cell phones, telecommunications industry for almost 20 years. Part of that time was spent in cell phones, the very beginning and the very end of it. We came out with new models. We were chomping at the bits to come out with new models because the models that we had, nobody liked. You know, it was passe. But it all started with something that was installed in your vehicle, which then they put into a bag, which then looked like a brick, which then folded in half and cost you $2,000 if you wanted to talk on it, which then...
And you had to walk up on top of the nearest building or mountain or whatever to get a...
Yeah. And now we can run our lives on it. We have been reduced to running our lives on a piece of equipment. We know nothing of the world around us and the true nature of what is going on. We are too busy Twittering and tweeting, Facebooking, and turning around and seeing what's on, who's dancing with the stars, and who's going to be the next American Idol, to even be aware that somebody is sneaking up behind us with a shotgun and it's cocked and they're going to blow our brains out.
Listen, if there is some sort of cataclysmic event, I know most of Americans or the Western world are going to be in trouble. Because nobody knows how to, you know, to grow food. You know, most of the people don't know how to do this and that. They're all completely dependent on plumbers, grocery stores, electricians. Nobody knows how to do that stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, I mean, they're out of luck.
Yeah.
And I'm one of them.
Well, here's something that's even worse than that. Let's look at something. Let's go to a prophecy revelation, Revelation 16:8-9. It says, "And it was granted the power of the sun to scorch the men." Now, NASA is telling us that we're coming up into a solar cycle where the sun is supposed to increase and we're supposed to have some of the worst solar storms that we've ever had. What NASA isn't telling you is that this is taking place at the same time that we're going through the Great Rift. Okay, what does that mean? We all hear about the Great Rift. Well, you know, here's where another science comes in that we really need to know in order to understand the multiverse and the very power or the very person of God or Yahweh. The dynamic energy is what I'm talking about. Let's take a look at this dynamic energy for a second. If you had how much energy is actually bound up here, we don't know, but guess what? It made our third-dimensional world. Take a look at the mass of a black hole. It sucks in light. It sucks in anything around it. And then multiply that by the mass of everything in our universe, and then you start to understand the type of mass that we have at the center of all existence. Now, we know that there's a field that comes off of our Earth that surrounds the Earth. It's the magnetic, the magnetosphere, and it's, we set our compasses by it, and we basically run our lives by it. We also know that it's moving, and it's moving at a rate that the airports have to recalibrate now. So when we're recalibrating our compasses, isn't that wonderful? Anyway, when you look at the different things that are going on like that, the weather patterns moving, volcanoes popping up, earthquakes happening, it's because we're going through this great rift, and that the magnetic force, and it's the best way to think about this is the Coriolis effect. When you flush your toilet, if you're in the northern hemisphere, it's going to spin clockwise. In the southern hemisphere, it's going to spin counterclockwise. Well, we have a big torsion field which comes off of everything. We call it our aura. We call it the gravitational field of Earth, or the gravitational field of the sun, or the gravitational field of the Milky Way, or the universe, or whatever gravitational field forms around a black hole. What about the gravitational field of this dynamic that we cannot see, cannot touch, but we know that we have to be in the effects of if we are alive, if we exist in a physical sense, and we are dealing with something that goes through physics, that can penetrate physical area, then the gravitational field or the torsion field, which is coming off the dynamic energy we know as God, is the controlling force over everything. Torsion field physics is what sacred geometry is based on. It's what rules nature. When we look at a nautilus, how the shell just kind of reproduces itself, and everything, that there's an actual, I forget the name of the formula, but it's when you're being sucked into a black hole is a good example. The closer you get to the center of it, the faster you're spinning. On the outside, you're turning very slowly, but as you get closer to the center, things speed up. And we are coming to the center now of the Milky Way, and things are speeding up. The reason is we're moving out of the torsion field from one side, out of that gravitational field of one side of the Milky Way, into a place where there is no gravitational field, and then we've got to move to the gravitational field on the other side. Now, we know this has happened before because we can track it in the mineral complexes within the very planet itself. Magnetite faces one way for a certain amount, and then all of a sudden it faces the opposite direction. So some magnetic force is changing the flow of magnetite as it's coming out of areas like the deep rifts of the Earth. As the volcanic activity is happening and the magma solidifies, all the magnetite is pulled in the direction of the poles. So we see that they flip-flop back and forth time and time again. So guess what? They're getting ready to flip-flop again. Well, in 5 years, when we go to flush our toilets, guess which way the water is going to start to run?
So, Peter, this rift you're speaking about, are you referring to what do you think about the whole December 21st, 2012 thing? Because they call that a rift, too, where the sun goes through the Milky Way or whatever.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You see, that's when we are the most vulnerable. It's at that point that the natural... Now, we're not talking about anything extraterrestrial. We're not talking about anything man-made. We're talking about a natural cycle that happens every time the Earth passes by the Great Rift. I'm not a geologist. I don't have the data in front of me. This is purely theoretical, the research that I've done. And what my theory is that there is no gravity coming off of the Milky Way in the middle. And when the Earth, when our whole solar system actually passes through this, we go into that neutral gravity zone. So over the surface of the Earth. Put that over the surface of the sun, and you lessen the grip. It's like holding tight onto somebody's hand and releasing the grip. You're letting go. When we get to the other side of the Great Rift, the grip comes on, but it changes hands because now we're being gripped from the other side. We're in the opposite side of the torsion field, and so this is which we see speeding up now will start to slow down. But they're going to be at their worst time after or as we are approaching December 21st, 2012, and as we go past that. You know, we get through winter. It's always colder after you go through winter. Here we are in February. You guys are freezing your butts off. Well, how was it in December? Well, did you have warm weather in December in Florida?
Yes.
So you know, we're past winter. I mean, you know, come on, we're heading towards spring now.
So when
what's
this happens,
here?
People going to be thrown out into space everywhere and die? Like,
things
are going to go flying everywhere, right? Even people.
No. Not at all. Because we will not notice the what's going on. We're not going to notice the difference. If I took a stick of gum and put it on top of your hat, you never felt me put the gum on top of you, nor did you feel the weight. So that's what we're talking about is negligence, because we are ruled by the gravity of the Earth. The Earth is ruled by the gravity of the sun. All the planets are ruled by the gravity of the sun. The moon is ruled by the gravity of the Earth. But the gravity of our whole solar system is influenced by the gravity of the Milky Way. You see?
Yeah.
So overall, you know, if you have 1 pound per square inch, that's not much. But wait a minute. If we're talking about a billion square inches, wait a minute. See, that's a lot of weight there. But we're taking the weight off, and what's happening is we're seeing the Earth starting to expand. It's like, stretching, getting the muscles, you know, stretched out and relaxed. It's creating a little bit more land. We know the population is growing. We've got to have new places to live. The only problem is that we've built cities on top of the places that are going to expand, and so they're all going to fall down. Is it the Earth's fault we built cities there? No. Is it the Earth's fault that we drilled a hole down into the mantle, through the crust, into the pre-mantle and released a mantle of oil? No, that's not the Earth's fault. The Earth's been seeping that crap out for millions of years anyway. Oil is not a product of dinosaurs dying or diatoms falling to the bottom of the ocean. Yeah, they probably create a little oil, but they don't create the stuff that's being made under the crust of the Earth. And that's the stuff that they're drilling and hitting. It's stuff that is under so much pressure and shooting right out. That stuff ain't never seen the day of light. That was made within the bowels of the planet itself. There's probably more oil on this planet than there is water. Something to think about, including the stuff we've already burned. Or I should say not including the stuff we've already burned. It's all underneath. That's why you have these deep wells that are going down 18,000 feet to find the stuff. It's down there. It ain't never seen the day of light. It's being manufactured down at almost the mantle level. So now we've got all these natural processes occurring. Put on top of that the non-natural processes. Put on top of that things like HARP, things like BP, things like polluting the Earth terribly for almost 200 years, really terribly. I mean, we've polluted the Earth with nuclear radiation. We've set off thousands of nuclear bombs in the names of research. Forget about Nagasaki and Hiroshima. I can't tell you exactly where somebody put a map up online. You can go find it. Go Google it. It's a map of all the nuclear explosions. It's a map of the world with all the nuclear explosions that have taken place since the first two atomic bombs. No, I think it's actually since the very first one. And the thing lights up like a Christmas tree going through the late 50s and 60s and into the 70s. It's like, wow, we're just blowing them up all over the place. No wonder we caught the attention of these aliens, because if we destroy ourselves, they have nothing to rule and there ain't nothing to fight for. And so we might as well just destroy the whole planet and get it over and done with. However, you've got the other school of thought that says, look, let's clean up the mess and let's go forward and let's put it back on track. Let's get the seventh dimension reattached. Let's make all those people who are looking for enlightenment happy, and let's move on in life and let the humans develop and welcome them into what we want to call the galactic family or the multiverse family. But that's essentially the end result. But we've got the situation that's going on now, which is tied directly into the comments about religion. Let's go back to the invention of religion. Religion started on the plains of Mesopotamia a little over 5,000 years ago with the kingdom of Nimrod. Now, Nimrod, the Bible says very little about Nimrod. It says he was a mighty hunter in opposition to Yahweh or to God. But it doesn't really tell you much more than he had the Tower of Babel built. That really upset God. He turned around and confused all this. What's interesting is that the people slowly left off building the temple. Now, what's interesting is that they have found Sumerian cuneiform writing in South America in among Mesoamerican texts. So there's a definite connection and a substantiation for what is being recorded here in Genesis. But anyway, so what we have is if we do some historic research on the kingdom of Nimrod, what you find out is it consists of Nimrod, his wife Semiramis, and her son Tammuz. Now, as the kingdom developed, Semiramis was essentially put in charge of religion. And what she did, according to the historic account, is that she made Nimrod not only king over the people, but god over the people. She made him sun god. Her herself became the Holy Mother, the goddess of the moon, the goddess of the earth, the goddess of the stars, the goddess of heaven. And then when her son was born, you see, Tammuz, became the son of the mother of the stars. He was a star child or a star god. So you have the setup of essentially the first three religions, or the three main religions today, because the symbol for the sun god is what we call the Star of David. It's actually the Star of Raphan, or the Star of Molech. Go look that up on Google. Raphan is spelled R-A-P-H-E-N. Molech is spelled M-O-L-E-C-H. Molech is also symbolized by an owl. Anybody who ever watches Adult Swim, they had to see the owl symbol on Adult Swim. Guess what? That is impregnating the minds of our children with the sign of Molech. Molech required a live child sacrifice. They would take children that were born from the fertility rites that they had during the spring, and if it was your first child, guess what? You got to offer it up to Molech. They would take the infant and they would throw it into the flap of Molech, which was actually a open furnace, and they would burn the children alive, and they would have beating drums in the background to drown out their screams. Mm. This is the same god that's being worshipped today. Trust me. Look, go to Washington, D.C. Go to Google Maps. Go to Washington, D.C. Go to the Capitol building. Look at it from above, and you will see the owl symbol outlined in the garden around the whole Capitol building. Look on your dollar bill in the upper right-hand corner on the face of the dollar bill, right on the curvature where the one is. You will see a tiny, tiny little symbol. It's the symbol of Molech. Molech is who is worshipped out at, I just had a brain fart. But Molech is also one of the supporting gods of, I know that Minerva is the one, but I think it's also the same god as Ishtar, which is where we get Easter from. Molech and Ishtar are the gods of Skull and Bones, the Yale fraternity, which several of the American presidents, a lot of our American businessmen, and a lot of the people in government have attended. They are all worshippers of Molech. And go look up the Star of Molech. What you're going to find, it's the Star of Zion, or the Star of David. If King David were alive right now, he would turn around and he would put every Zionist to the sword. I can tell you that for a fact, because he did it when he was alive. He destroyed people who worshiped those gods. That was what he was all about, destroying those people who worshiped those gods. And now they've insulted the very name of David by saying that this symbol is the Star of David. Now, the Holy Mother, Semiramis. Where have you heard the story of the Holy Mother giving birth to the star child or the Son of God? See, what happens in the story, in the saga of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz? Semiramis has Nimrod put to death. He's actually put to death during the winter solstice celebration in symbolism for the new year. After he died, she became pregnant, and she claimed that it was Nimrod incarnate. She gave birth to who she said was Nimrod, who came back to be with his people. And this sets the pattern for what we know quite well within the Egyptian story between Horus and Isis and the Ra gods that follow. All the pharaohs are named after the stars, they believe that they are the descendants of Isis. And so that same family, that same line is with us today. If you look in the scriptures, it was broken off. I love this scripture, Acts 7:42-43. It's the prophet Stephen, the disciple Stephen, who's before the Jewish high court, the Sanhedrin, and he says, quoting the prophet Amos, he says, "Was it to me, O Israel, who you worshipped for 40 years in the wilderness? No, it was to the star god Raphan and to Molech who you made idols and to whom you worshipped." So he was calling the religious leaders of Jesus' day worshippers of Molech and Raphan. Jesus said that they worshipped the devil. Oh, no, he said that they were the sons of the devil, offsprings of vipers. So he knew who they were worshipping to, and he named it. Now, after the disciple Stephen told him that, they took him outside and stoned him to death because they didn't like what he said. They're not going to like what I said. They'll probably just take me out and head shoot me one day, but that's neither here nor there. Here we go with the last the symbol of the Holy Mother is what? The symbol of Isis is the Ankh cross. And so we have today as the symbol of the Holy Mother, the cross. And who's nailed to the cross? There's a dead man on a stick who they say is Jesus. Hey, look, here's your God. He's a dead man on a stick. What do you think of that? Well, who are they worshiping? They're the Holy Mother. They are worshiping the stars, the moon, the earth. They're worshiping the same things that Isis did. Let's go to the sun. From the horns of Isis was born Ra. And from Semiramis was born Tammuz, the star god. And what religion uses the crescent moon and the star as their symbol today? Oh, that's right, Islam. So there you go. Zionist Judaism, you've got worshiping Satan outright. You've got the Christian religions who are worshiping the Holy Mother. And you've got you got all of Islam who is worshiping the sun.
You know what, though, Peter? I think as a lot of that information was disseminating, through the different tribes and countries and stuff like that, I think a lot of that information, all of those symbols, they were just recycled or their meanings were watered down. And
you're 100% correct. They started back in Samaria. They were added to. We use the same symbol. The swastika is used as a symbol for the sun around the world.
I agree with you 1,000%, Peter, on that note right there. Yeah, that Christianity and Judaism and all that, they're just hand-me-down stuff from the original. And you look at the swastika. I mean, that's a sign of luck and love and everything else. And now it's, represents complete, Holocaust.
Yeah, but has the symbol changed, or has the meaning of the symbol changed?
The meaning has changed.
The meaning has changed, but you know what? The symbol applies to the same person. It was still used in worshiping the sun. It's a sun-worshipping symbol. If you turn it one way, it's to worship the father. If you turn it the other way, it's to worship the mother. It's the feminine and the masculine together. It's the male and female, depending on which way it's turned. But yes, it was something that was used as a positive thing. But it was still being used to worship the sun. And let's face it. If the sun is being represented here by Satan or Lucifer or the covering cherub of Eden, this entity that has a dog in this fight, this alien, and we're going to get into his true identity shortly, real quick here. What we have here are a group of people worldwide who are covertly worshiping this demon entity, and they are overtly teaching others to worship this demon entity in the name of Christ or in the name of Allah or in the name of whomever. You see, the people of the peasants don't know. The peasants only know what the king tells them. And that's where we are today. The king tells his bishops, this is what I want you to say. And so the bishops regurgitate what the king says. The king tells the politicians, this is what I want you to say. Kennedy went against what the king said, and he got a bullet in his head for it. Kennedy turned around and he had his hand in the Federal Reserve. He wanted to back the United States dollar with silver, and the Federal Reserve would have had to match it and do the same thing. And instead of doing that, they put a bullet in Americans to own more than $100 in gold coin. All the rest of the gold coin was sold to the Federal Reserve Bank, which was owned by the Rothschild entity, and they bought $380 billion of it at $20.67 an ounce. A year later, Roosevelt changed the strike price of gold to $35 an ounce, and the Rothschilds made 40% on their money in a year's investment. How do you like that? Talk about insider trading. Rape, burn, and make money from it, and they've done that time and time again since the Napoleonic Wars, and now they've set us up again. Only now it's changed. You see, something changed in 1914. The gods that were influencing the Babylonians, which have been influencing every culture, these aliens that have been visiting us, those who sided with Satan, the genetic engineers of the third dimension, who decided that, yeah, I'll take a piece of this action because God ain't going to do anything about it. God ain't, but the entity that we know as Jesus probably is. And that's what the prophecies say. So what we see happening here is we see control of the governments from 1913 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank of America, of New York, the third attempt and the final attempt for the Fed or for the Rothschilds to get a banking entity into the United States. They had to blackmail Woodrow Wilson in order to do it. Woodrow Wilson had an affair with one of his colleagues' wives while he was at Princeton. And his and the wife started to blackmail him. Went through a Jewish, or I should say a Zionist. I don't want to confuse the two. I said, Doc, what's going on over there? It's all politics. The Zionists are screwing everything up.
Peter, I want to definitely get into your perspective on the Antichrist, and you were talking about the identity of someone being revealed. Is that what that's leads up to?
The Antichrist isn't going to be anyone or anybody per se. However, a smoking gun for me was something was a book that has had more ridicule over the past 100 years than any book that I've ever heard of. It's the Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. I quote from it in my book, and I commentate on it in my book, Letters to Earth, You Can Survive Armageddon. It's said to be a plagiarized version of, a plagiarized forgery. That's what it's supposed to be. A plagiarized forgery is the nation. Now, I don't know how exactly you do that, but if you read the Protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion, it reads like a blueprint for the 20th century and into the 21st century. Things that they have laid out for world domination, and this came, this was adopted at the 1897 First Congress of Zion in Bern, Switzerland, and their goal was to recapture the Promised Land or the Holy Land and to repatriate Jews. The meeting was supposed to be held in Munich, Switzerland, and when the Jewish population found out what the goal of the Zionists were, they protested so much that the meeting had to be put off a year and moved to Bern, Switzerland. Anyway, that's just a little background information. So there, and a great dragon is hurled out of heaven, hurled out of whatever the dimensions are up there and down into the third dimension. They are now captured here or confined here. They can no longer leave the third dimension. They used to be able to travel back and forth. Now they're stuck here. So now we've got total alien influence on the earth since 1914. We have the First World War that breaks out, and then out of that we have the League of Nations, a hope for peace. The only problem is that the United States doesn't join the League, and when Nazism strings up, it puts a death blow to the League of Nations, which is what carries out, which is what is said in Revelation, the 13th chapter. When you get, however, that death blow is healed, and what happens is that there's another beast that comes about. This beast is a two-horned beast that looks like a lamb. It speaks peace, it looks like peace, but it speaks like a dragon. It speaks war. It even has the ability to call fire down from heaven. And Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Tokyo, Dresden, all incinerated, burned to the ground from fire from heaven. Interesting. That two-horned beast, or that beast that's talked about, is the United States and England. What happens is this beast breathes life into another beast, which is called, in Revelation 13, the image of the wild beast, or the image of the United Nations. What happened in 2001? The World Trade Center fell. George Bush, Tony Blair got together and said, look, guess what? Everybody's going to war against terrorism, and we're going back to Baghdad, and we're going to destroy Saddam Hussein once and for all. The United Nations didn't have a choice in the matter. They were told what to do. So life was breathed into the beast. Our world changed in 2011. The next step is to bring out a new world order, totalitarian. Now, here's something interesting. The alien agenda and what they're trying to convey is that we need to be a class one planet. We need to evolve to the next level, and a class one planet means one world government. So now you've got this one world government that's being supported. We've got reports of FEMA camps and all these other situations. And who's behind it? Bushes, Cheneys, Rumsfelds, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Warburgs, the investment houses. The line goes on and on and on. And it gets deep, and the money trail can be followed right to the very end. And we see global destabilization now with our currency. We see all our systems failing around the world, and it can all be fixed if they turn around and wipe out the debt. Huh. Okay, everybody sign on to the New World Order. Let's turn around and do this. We'll wipe out your debt if you turn around and signed on. Here's your new credit card. It's global credits now. No more American money. Yep, that's what we're headed for. But how do we get there? I love this. The president virtually quoted from my book almost a year ago, the Sunday before the nuclear summit, he said that if terrorists get a nuclear weapon, they will have the compulsion to use it on, he named off four cities, Washington, D.C. was one of them. He said if they set off a nuke in Washington, D.C. or any one of the other four cities, that it would change the face of security on the earth for years to come. So all we need is a false flag attack like we had happen in 9/11 in Washington, D.C. sometime in the near future, like maybe right after the most destable time of the earth, like when we see naturally disasters going all over. Wow, now terrorists set off a nuke in Washington, D.C., and who are we going to blame it on? Al-Qaeda. And we're going to link it back to Iran because we don't want them to have nuclear toys. And so we start a war in Iran, and as we start to turn the Middle East to glass, all of a sudden the UFOs, which are showing up now, start knocking out our nuclear missiles. And all of a sudden we see holographs of Allah forming, and we hear the voice of Allah in our, which is generated by harp, saying, "Put your weapons down. There must be peace. You must be one planet." And we think it's God and the aliens talking to us, and we submit and we put our weapons down into a one-world order, except for those people who aren't going to believe what's going on. And then you're going to have chaos break out. The one-world order gets to operate for 390 days. It's a totalitarian government. There'll be massive rebellions. What's going on in Egypt will happen worldwide. There'll be FEMA camps and protesters being hurled off and executed, and you can expect that there'll be biological agents to be used in order to put down insurrection. You can expect at least one-third of the population to be killed off by the New World Order. And if you don't believe me, what's happened in Soviet Russia, look what's happened in China, and most of all, most recent, look what's happened in Cambodia. The killing fields in Cambodia killed off a third of the population. A third of the population of Russia was killed off under communist rule, and a third of the population of China was killed off under communist rule. It's going to happen on a worldwide basis. But we can get to the other side.
Hey, do you know that reincarnation is now officially illegal in China now?
Yeah, good.
You have to get pre-approved.
That's wild.
To reincarnate from China. It's an actual law. They just passed it.
That's wild. Now I don't understand that because I don't think I've ever been anybody before. I've always been myself. I've had a strange life.
Because this is how they're getting rid of Tibet and the Dalai Lama, making it illegal to reincarnate. And what's going to happen is China's going to pick their own Dalai Lama.
Yep, there you go.
And that's so they can control that whole.
Oh, well, now here's an interesting thing, because in my book I state an interesting fact. The United Nations is supporting a one-world religion that's based on Buddhism. It's based on Buddhism and American Indian spirituality. And it's an effort for anybody who wants to be religious can now join the New World Order's religion, and you can worship the Earth. You can worship Mother Earth. How's that? Are you all happy now? Peace and blessings to everyone. It's during this time that you have the last situation happen. Now, we're going to experience earthquakes and everything else on top of the insurrection because we're going through 2012. What we are going to see is not going to happen in 2012. It'll happen early in 2013. But it should be over somewhere after 2014. My guess is that Armageddon will, and I say guess, based on my research, I'm going to say that Armageddon is going to be here April 4th, I'm sorry, April 14th, 2014. The reason for that is that April 14th and Nisan 14, which happens to be the Passover.
With 12 first-round knockout victories, Vitor is coming.
Hello?
I think we ran out of time.
No, here we got 8 minutes.
With 12 first-round knockout victories, Vitor Belfort is coming for the middleweight title. But champion Anderson Silva has other plans. Bud Light presents UFC 126.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
I don't know what it is. We're here with Letters to Earth, Peter Kling, and
with
Weird.
With 12 first-round knockout victories, Vitor Belfort is coming for the middleweight title. But champion Anderson Silva has other plans. Bud Light presents...
Race fans!
Got it? I don't know why that's happening. That's a complete mystery, but...
commercial, I think.
Let's get your link in here. PeterKling.com for his book, Letters to Earth. You Can Survive Armageddon, and I'm not sure what's going on with the commercial thing. That hasn't ever happened.
No. We got like 7 minutes left.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, here's where the synchronicity comes up. April 14th, 2014 is the same time as Nisan 14, and Nisan 14 is the day of the Passover. And we have a lot. If you look around us, we essentially still worship the Egyptian gods. I mean, look at your money. You got a pyramid on your money. Look at Washington, D.C. We got the penis of Ra sticking right up in Washington. The penis of Ra sticking up in the Vatican. Wherever you go, you see these obelisks, which are sticking up and part of worshiping the sun god. People love Egypt. We love King Tut. We love the Egyptology. We love the pyramids. We love the Sphinx. Worshiping Egypt today. And it's not by error that we're doing that. It's planned. The gods are paraded before us on TV. So just like what happened back during the Exodus, there was a sign that was given, and back then it was to focus on Jesus coming as the Lamb of God. Back then they had to paint their doorposts with the blood of Christ. But Jesus, when he had his what is called the Last Supper, he said, "Eat this bread, drink this wine, it means my body." But he also said, "Keep doing this in memory of me until I return." Now, Revelation says he's coming back with an army. He's not a dead man on a stick. He's a king. He's been given a promotion. He's coming back with kingly power, and he's coming back, and he's pissed. And he's coming back with an army to destroy the New World Order that gets set up, to remove the Class One planet, to kill the people who are supporting this idea, and to recapture those rebel aliens who they confined here nearly 100 years ago and haul their butts out of here. Now the true enlightenment can start. You see, now the good guys got here. Now we can go on and we can get our DNA fixed. We can turn around and we can be educated on how to keep clean energy and how to use this planet. And we can turn around and procreate. And you know what? Once we're back on track, I have a little piece of real estate picked out about 22,000 light years away from here. It's beautiful. The animals are running around. Half the animals are iridescent. A lot of things glow in the dark on that planet. There's plenty of water. I love to swim and scuba dive. I'm going to have a ball raising my own family on that planet. I'm going to fill up that planet with Klingons. That's an interesting thought, isn't it?
So exactly how do you survive Armageddon? We're going down to our final moments, and I want to make sure everybody gets your website again. That's peterkling.com, Letters to Earth, You Can Survive Armageddon. And if you could, as we end our show, if you could just give us a few hints on how to survive Armageddon during this apocalyptic Four Horsemen circle jerk. Go ahead.
it's going to take faith and knowledge. First of all, if you're listening to me, go ahead and read my website. If you're compelled, buy my book and enjoy it. I have not had one person tell me that I was crazy or insane or anything else. I have had 100% positive feedback off of this book. Read the book. Most of the information is in there except for give right now. Here's the key to surviving Armageddon. Jesus is key, and the reason why he is because he was actually an alien that was essentially transformed into the life form of a man. His soul, his life force, was put into our DNA. He grew up as a human. He gave his life as a human. when his life force went, he was given more power than he had when he when he came here. That we have to understand, because now he legally owns the rights to the human race. And because he owns the rights to the human race, he can decide what he wants to do with us. And he's coming back to take possession of us. We need to understand the value of that sacrifice and know enough to keep that Lord's evening meal to identify that we know that. So on Nisan 14 or on April 14th, 2014, you need to at least understand that this is the day that Jesus died, or this is the day that Jesus died on, almost 2,000 years ago, so that he knows that we're here today and supporting his efforts and looking for him to come back, because when he shows up, he's showing up with an alien army, and the fun will begin. And then you can expect another third of the population to be wiped out, because all of the supporters of the New World Order will be gone, and only those who are looking for true enlightenment will be left. It's just that simple.
All right, Peter. Well, on that note, I guess we could just wrap this up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm on Facebook. If you want to be friends on Facebook, hit me up on Facebook. Go to my website. If I'm available, I'm more than happy to answer questions. Knowledge is king. You need to understand what's happening in this world. And if we're asleep to the switch, we're going to crash. That's all there is to it. Knowledge is king. Store some food for yourself. Rice, beans, something that'll last. And be prepared. Learn what's going on around us.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to have you on the show, and definitely food for thought and the Last Supper. So have a good evening, and we're going to definitely have you back sometime. It was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, thank 2 hours isn't that. Enough. 2 hours
yeah.
isn't enough, Peter.
You bet.
No, I did a 3-hour show one time, and it was still information.
We appreciate it, and we'll definitely get you back on again sometime to get to this subject a lot more. So thank you for being on the show, and have a good evening.
You too. Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye.
That's it for the Church of Mabus. Come to our forum and post 1,000 times at mabusincarnate.com.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave.